Well, this morning we're going to be looking at our Genesis reading, and we've been in this story of Jacob for a while, and we haven't preached on it a lot, but we've certainly been hearing it. And this is a familiar story to us, and one that in some ways can be a little peculiar. It's an odd story in many ways, but then again, the story of Jacob has got well, some odd things right from the very beginning. But this one is very interesting, where Jacob is on his way back after serving Laban and getting taken advantage of, and then taking advantage of Laban, because that's just the way those two seem to address the world, was how can I get something for nothing? And he's on his way back, and he's eventually going to meet Esau, which is, of course, a matter of some concern to him. And they come, and they're almost there, and they come to this stream. And Jacob sends the family and all of his stuff across, and then stays on the first side of the stream. And it says that he was left alone, and then a man wrestled with him till daybreak. And I've always thought this is, I wish there was a little bit more there. Like, did this person just show up and jump on him, or did he show up and say, okay, let's go, best two out of three? I don't know. But all we know is that this person came and then wrestled with Jacob until daybreak. And then when the man saw he could not overpower him, he then cheated and put his hip out of the socket. And I've always wondered about this whole wrestling thing. And I heard, I can't remember who it was, talking about it. He said, the interesting thing about wrestling is that unlike most other kinds of fighting, you're pretty much always in contact with the other person. Like in boxing, you're not, I mean, you clinch now and then, but you're sort of at a distance and you're punching somebody or lots of these other ways of conflict. But in wrestling, you're right there. I mean, you're just holding on to each other. It's about as close as you can get to anything. It's like a hug, only with a bit more sweat, I suppose. And so they have this wrestling match that goes all night, which I find just astonishing. It's been a long time since I've done any kind of wrestling. I remember doing the official Olympic kinds of wrestling at school, and that was tough enough. And then just wrestling around with your brothers or your cousins or whatever else it can be. You know, I think an hour would be an incredibly lengthy period of time to wrestle. But this was all night. And so we have this whole wrestling match. And then the man who has just pulled somehow Jacob's hip out of the socket, or wrenched, as he says, just by touching it, says, let me go. It's daybreak. Jacob says, I will not let you go unless you bless me, which is an odd kind of thing to do. And I've sort of wondered about that. The difficulty with all this is we're looking at it from the end. Like, we know how it ended. We know what's going on in this story. But we don't know exactly when Jacob knew that there was something extraordinary going on. But if he didn't, why would he ask for a blessing from somebody who's just been wrestling all night? And if he knew, why did he wrestle? I mean, wrestling with God just seems like an unwise thing to me. If nothing else, you know you can't win. But so I don't know what's happening. He says, I won't let you go when you bless me. The man asks this odd question, what's your name? Which is, like, whenever God asks us questions, you know there's a whole lot more to it than just wanting an answer. So when God asks this question, or this man, whatever's going on there, what's your name? He says, Jacob. He said, okay, you're not going to be Jacob anymore. We're going to change your name to Israel, because you have struggled with God, with men and women and everybody else, that you've still overcome. And Jacob says, tell me your name. Man says, why do you ask my name? Which, at least one commentator said, is an impossible question. Go look at all these other places where God says, you don't really know what my name is anyway, but all I can tell you is I am. So he blesses him, and away he goes. And I look at this whole thing, and I wonder, so what's happening here? And I can't remember again what sort of moved me in this direction. But this night is, almost in microcosm, is Jacob's entire life. From the time Jacob was born, it was perfectly clear to his mother and to anyone who was willing to pay attention that Jacob was, for whatever reason, the chosen one of God. That God's decision to bless Jacob had sort of jumped past the idea of the eldest son is always the one who gets the most, who gets two portions of the inheritance and all that. And God says, Jacob is the one I've chosen. There's never been a time when it hasn't been obvious that God has a special interest in Jacob. and that God, because of that, is going to take care of Jacob. And yet, Jacob has spent his entire life doing everything he can to sneak around the rules to get more than he thinks he's going to get, which just seems so counterproductive and ends up with, well, he gets these things, but it seems awfully difficult. And I've sometimes thought about Jacob's blessing. Is Jacob hurt himself getting this blessing? In this case, he got his hip knocked out of the socket, whatever that's all about and all that. And I've often thought, it's like, the best image I can come up with is when you give somebody something just because you want to, and they grab it with such ferocity that they hurt themselves. And I've seen small children do this. You know, you give them something, they finally want it, and they grab it and they hurt themselves because it's a toy truck or something, and it's hard, and they hurt their fingers grabbing it so hard. And I sometimes wonder if that's what Jacob's life was just grabbing the things that God was going to give him anyway in such a way that he actually hurt himself. And when we look at this, we say, well, was Jacob actually blessed or not? He ended up with a limp, whether he wanted it or not, and apparently he has this limp for the rest of his life. But maybe the limp was part of the blessing. There's something about human beings that we seem to find it easier to forget things that are good than to remember them, in the same way that we seem to find it easier to remember things that are bad than forget them. All of us have got these things in our past that we keep going back to, and whether they're something as trivial as being embarrassed in grade school that pop up at the most inopportune moments and remind you of that we just can't seem to forget. It doesn't seem to do us any good, but it's just always there. To how many times have you been at somebody's anniversary celebration, restatement of vows, even if it's as dramatic as that, and people talk about, I sometimes forget about how important this person is in my life. It's just something about us that we find it easy to forget these things. We take them for granted. And I don't know if it's that problem-solving nature of being a human that we look for what's wrong so we can fix it, because that's it, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we sometimes forget about all these blessings that we have. And I wonder, maybe every time Jacob took a step, he was reminded of that blessing. And that maybe that was actually part of the blessing. And I sometimes wonder, would Jacob be willing to trade the blessing to get rid of the limp? And I don't think he would. Sometimes we get blessings out of things we never would have chosen, because there's no indication in the text or anywhere else that Jacob wanted a limp. He wanted a blessing. He somehow, at some point in this interaction, it came to him that this wasn't just some miscellaneous person who was a really good wrestler, that this was God, or an angel of God, or something of that nature. And that from that, he wanted a blessing. And the blessing seems to have come at this cost. And it's not that God has to charge us something for a blessing. It's not a transaction. So what's happening? And every time I come back to this story, every time I think about it, there are new little parts of it that pop up again. But the one that I come back to often is this whole idea that the limp was probably part of the blessing. It became part of who Jacob, subsequently named Israel, was. And when I think of the people who have made a profound difference in my life, who have really built into me in good ways, none of them were perfect. They were quite open about the fact that they weren't perfect, and all of them had something amiss, because we all do. And I sometimes, and maybe you've run across it as well, this little sort of almost a catchphrase, that the best kind of healers are wounded healers. Because if you're going to learn something, who do you want to learn it from? Somebody who seems to have known it from the time they were born, or somebody who had to laboriously struggle to understand how to do this? I had a math teacher once, a wonderful person, who had an intuitive grasp of math. Why he taught math, I have no idea. For me, anyway, he was one of the worst teachers I've ever had, wonderful as he was as a person. I really liked him. We went to the same church. He was just a great guy. But you bring him this problem and say, well, like, I just don't understand it. And you look at it and you say, well, the answer is 11 or whatever it is. Well, that's not helpful. How did you get there? Well, you just do this and this, and it's easy. Well, no, it's not easy. Math has never been particularly easy for me. Arithmetic's okay, but anything beyond that has been a bit of a struggle. The people who've taught me how to do math are the people who have the same kind of struggles I had and then figured it out. And when they figured it out, they went, okay, this is hard. So I think if you try this, this was a little trick that helped me. There's something about this where people who've had the same kinds of difficulties we have that, well, it makes it easier for us to listen to them or to understand how they explain things. If we're worried about, you know, can we have a relationship with God because we're not perfect, we're not, you know, we're not as honest as we'd like, or we're not whatever as we would like, go look at the story of Jacob. And I'm willing to bet that there are a number of things that Jacob did that you would never do. And if Jacob could be blessed, I suspect we can too. And I don't know if that's the only purpose for the story of Jacob in the Bible, but it's a pretty good one. And when I think of my own challenges with just overcoming who I am and the fallenness that I exhibit all too often, for better or worse, I don't get a lot of comfort reading Paul or Paul's story. And yes, I understand that Paul persecuted the church, but like that's so far beyond anything I've ever likely to do that there's no connection there. And other than that, you read Paul and he was this brilliant student on his way to becoming probably the rabbi, the teacher of his generation, if he wouldn't have been sort of sidetracked into the teacher for all of Christianity for all time. Yeah, he's just beyond all of it. Jacob, on the other hand, cutting corners, taking advantage of his siblings, doing everything he can to get all that he's owed and more besides. I said, yeah, I can see parts of myself in Jacob. But Jacob wasn't just abandoned by God because he was a terrible person. He wasn't even abandoned by his family, which is probably a good thing too. He was actually blessed. Jacob was blessed. He became the one of the origin points of the nation of Israel. Tremendously important. One of the part of the genealogy of Jesus himself. Well, if he could be used in that way, maybe we can. And maybe when we look at some of these difficulties that we have, and we look at some of these limps that we have to push the metaphor as far as we can, maybe instead of looking at them as something that we always want to just ignore or get past or have go away forever, maybe, just maybe, that's part of the blessing. Because maybe every time Jacob took a step with that limp, he didn't just think of the blessing, but maybe it reminded him of all those things he fought for that God was going to give him anyway. And when I have that, well, yet another experience of that besetting sin, whatever is bothering me the most these days, I can look at it and say, I want that to go away forever. And there's nothing wrong with wanting that. But I can also look at it through the lens of, to go back to Paul. And Paul said that when he had that thorn, whatever that was, God said, my grace is sufficient for you. I'm going to demonstrate my power through your weakness. Through your weakness, not in spite of your weakness, but through your weakness. And yeah, maybe you've got a limp, metaphorical or literal, but that's part of the blessing. And getting rid of it won't do you any good and might actually do you some harm. So every time you take that step, may you be reminded of those two things. That yes, you're not perfect. But imperfect as you may be, you are still blessed by God. And whether you wrestled the blessing out of him or whether it was there when you needed it the most doesn't matter. We've all been blessed. We still all have limps and things to go through and to work through. But when we look at it from that perspective, when we look at it as saying that the limp, the difficulties, are all wrapped up in the blessing, and you can't have one without the other. It makes some of these struggles a lot easier to take. Maybe not easier to understand, but a lot easier to take. And to realize that God's with us in all of them, because he was there when they were given. Amen.